This stock and commodity report is made possible with support from Grainfield Marketing in Normal. Grainfield Marketing can be reached at 1-800-383-4647 or on the internet at grainfield.com.
From the Land-Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 29th day of August, 2008. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Azuzalo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated. He's in Lafayette, Indiana. And later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Bruce Bostard, the manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company out of Ludlow, Illinois. In agricultural news, there's legislation on the Hill that would give the Secretary of Ag discretionary powers to open the CRP. More on that later as we head into this Labor Day weekend. Speaking of which, do you know the story behind this holiday and why it comes on the first Monday of September? We'll find out during this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report. The Closing Market Report is a production of WILL Public Radio for the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Taking a look now at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on a Friday afternoon. The nearby contracts in the wheat pit finished the day like this. September wheat down 9 3/4 at $7.79 1/4. December at $8.01 1/4, 9 3/4 lower. And March wheat futures at $8.25 1/4, 9 1/2 cents lower on the day. September corn futures $5.68 1/4, down 1 3/4. December at $5.85, 2 3/4 lower. And the March contract at $6.04, down 2 3/4. May futures $6.16 1/4, down 3 cents. September soybeans at $13.32, a half lower. November at $13.24, unchanged on the afternoon. And January at $13.41 1/2, up 1/4. March contract $13.53 3/4, unchanged for the day. September bean meal at $3.67.40, down $1.20. September bean oil at $53.40, up 6 cents for the day. August live cattle futures at $101.77 1/2, 70 cents higher. October at $104.50, 22 and a half cents higher. September feeders at $111.15, a nickel higher on the afternoon, and the October futures at $110.95, 52 and a half cents higher. October lean hog futures at $68.42 1/2, down a dime on a Friday afternoon. And December futures gained 60 cents from the CME Group's livestock side. Lean hog futures $69.55 was the final trade on a Friday afternoon for the lean hogs. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. This is a production of WILL Public Radio for the farming world from the University of Illinois campus in Urbana-Champaign. Taking a look now at the outside markets for the afternoon. October crude oil at $116.05, 46 cents higher for the day. November at $117.88 a barrel, $1.89 higher for the day. Ethanol trading at $2.37 is up 6 4/10 of a cent. October natural gas at $7.96 6/10, down 8 4/10. And the RBOB is trading at $2.97 for the nearby, 5 1/10 of a cent lower for the day. September heating oil futures, diesel fuel, $3.16 2/10, 1 9/10 lower. And the propane October contract at $1.74, a penny and a half higher on the afternoon. September gold futures at $829.30 are now trading $1.60 lower for the day. And the Dow Jones Industrial Average at 11,594 is just about 121 points lower. The U.S. dollar is currently trading at 77.32. That's down 17 on the afternoon. And the CRB index at 393.58 is up 0.23. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like today from our own Ed Kieser, chief meteorologist. He says in the north and central parts of Illinois tonight, mostly clear. In central Indiana and the south, partly cloudy, a chance of a few scattered showers early. Lows will range from 51 in the far northern parts of Illinois to 65. That'll happen in the far south. Tomorrow, sunny skies. Highs will range from 82 in northern Indiana to 89 in the far south. The extended forecast says dry weather will be expected across all of Illinois and Indiana for the entire Labor Day weekend, right into early next week. You're listening to the Closing Market Report.
The closing market report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On a Friday afternoon, we're joined to take a look at the agricultural commodity markets by Mike Zuzulo of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated in Lafayette, Indiana. Good afternoon to you, Mike.
Welcome home, Todd.
Thank you much. Your compadres, Sherman and Chuck, made a long trip, I think 10 hours for Sherman yesterday back to Hudsonville, Illinois. Did they arrive safely?
Yeah, they did, and they commented several times about how nice you and Dave and all the people at Will Radio were and how good you were to them taking that trip. So we really appreciate that.
Well, yeah, we let them out just a bit early, and it's a good thing. You know, it was a rough ride coming out of there yesterday afternoon. Dave stuck around to finish closing things up, and I got on the road with Jackie Vakes and Joan Harshbarger, who's the secretary here, and started back around 5, about I don't know, I think it was right at 5 o'clock or maybe, no, it was earlier than that. It was about 4 o'clock. Dave was trying to get back inside the Farm Progress Show site. Took him an hour to do that. So he got there at 5. He had just a little bit to load up, and he spent 2 hours in line trying to get out of the Farm Progress Show site yesterday. He's going home early, so there won't be an email letter this weekend, first off. We'll remind folks of that. I think he told them that last week, but no email letter because it's been a busy week at the Farm Progress Show site for us, and his ride home was a long ride last night, too. He didn't get home until very, very early this morning, I believe. So we'll let Dave out of that one. But we won't let you out of talking about the commodity markets this afternoon. Why don't you go through the week's trade? We talked a lot about what futures should and can do while we were on the site, but really weren't in the groove of the trade. Can you give me an update, please?
Yeah, and it's really simple this week, Todd, but you picked a good week to be out because today was a lot like the rest of the week. You know, it seems like the wheat could not find a bottom and the dollar could not find a top. And after those fundamentals set the tone today, the technicals kind of took over. Obviously, we've been technically driven a lot this week, but obviously today we're even more so because of the light trade, the thin volume of trade with the three-day holiday. So in a nutshell, it seemed like coming from our perspective and watching the computer all week and talking to Chicago all week, there was just no fear that the global supplies of corn possibly being limited and going down because of our dry weather really was going to impact Chicago psychology at all, because there was more than enough wheat to go around for everybody was the mindset up there. And as long as the dollar stayed firm, it seemed like the outside markets, energies and metals, could not do any good to really give any kind of tiebreaker to the trade psychology. And so gravity really did kind of take effect here in the wheat especially. And like I said, the technicals really came into play heavily as well. And I think probably the most surprising thing in the trade today and this week as a whole was having these two, you know, whopper-type storms in the Gulf of Mexico, but barely closing up on the week in crude oil and natural gas. And I think, again, it kind of illustrates and highlights just how powerful that dollar turnaround has been, and also kind of illustrates the idea that, well, 6 months ago we needed the supply of crude oil and energies because of the strong, strong global demand, but now we don't need it as much. And I think those two things really do show up very clearly in the trade, whether you're looking at energies or whether you're looking at grains.
Let's talk a bit more about the weakness in wheat, because it was down 6 cents today in the nearby. Corn futures were off just a penny, and the soybeans managed either to be on either side of unchanged for the most part. But if you look at the weekly trade, wheat futures were pretty weak for the week, off what, nearly 87 cents, actually 86 and a quarter in the nearby, and next year is at 85 and a quarter lower. Is this the one that's going to lead things lower, and is it because of the global glut of, I don't know, I guess I can call it a glut of wheat, but is it a global glut of wheat or the global availability of wheat supplies? I mean, did we really change things that much from the time that we were really short of spring wheat supplies here in the United States to this point, that we got through the wheat harvest around the northern hemisphere, and now we have a lot of wheat on hand?
Well, it's a glut compared to last year. I think that's the best way to sum it up in the trade's mindset. The answer to your question quickly is no. We're building stocks, but we're still very tight globally, with the stocks-to-use ratio still down there in the last 3 to 4 years. haven't been able to build the stocks-to-use ratio up much at all. Well, the IGC numbers today kind of highlighted that the USDA world production number of around 671 million tons, IGC came out with 672 million tons. That kind of solidified and isolated the wheat from the other commodities, I think, that yes, the supplies are building, and yes, the demand is going down some because of these higher prices we had earlier in the year. But I think the other thing maybe we haven't talked a lot about is the fact that we do have that wheat-corn spread still correcting, and it's corrected a lot. Probably one of the worst things that happened at the end of June, early July, was the wheat gained on the corn, and that kind of mixed up traders because, you know, you think about it, with wheat stocks building and corn weather probably hitting the supply side here in the United States at least, you would think that the corn would gain on the wheat, but that's exactly the opposite direction we took about a month ago. And so we're having to rewind and go back and address that issue, and I think that added a little extra negativity to the wheat here along with this big delivery issue of convergence. What's the cash? What's the futures? I was stunned to see that Evansville, Indiana wheat prices for soft red were still 215 to 220 under September this morning.
Yeah.
And that's a huge issue to the trade right now.
Because I'm a contact for the university on occasion, I happened to get a call. I got a call this morning from a reporter out of Canada wanting to know who to talk to about this convergence problem in the wheat here in the Midwest. Of course, directed him to Daryl Good upstairs in Mumford Hall. But maybe you could address it a bit more because it's a problem now. It's been a problem for the past couple of years, and they want to say it's corrected out of Chicago, or have in the past, but it sure doesn't look like it is.
No, and I think the problem, based upon our Chicago contacts and also based upon just the economic theory, if you just add more delivery points, yes, you're probably going to be able to firm the basis up in certain areas of the country, but that's where there's millers at. And so by default, you're probably going to have to add delivery points where the greatest use is going to be. And so, yeah, you probably do a little bit to your domestic market there, but let's face it, the Gulf price has always been the export market. And how do you get the export market and the domestic market to come together? And I think, generally speaking, the people in Chicago that I feel like are in the know feel like just getting more delivery points isn't going to do it. You're probably going to have to probably work on the contract itself and how you settle out the actual futures once it expires. And there's probably a growing contingency out there that maybe a cash settled index, kind of like the hog index, that's worked very well since the CME installed that a few years back. And I'm thinking that maybe we're going to head towards that level now because it's just not working, like you say.
We spent a lot of time on wheat today. Why don't you talk just a bit about corn and soybean?
Well, corn and soybeans, briefly, I think we're optimistic next week, Todd. I feel like this three-day holiday maybe will bring a psychology shift. The open interest, as the market's been falling in corn, it's gone down 20,000 contracts this week, so that's a nice thing. It says longs are liquidating, but no new shorts are coming in. The 200-day moving average right underneath us at 577, we need to hold that, but I think if we can, then maybe next week the row crops do come in and put some premium back on the table, maybe give the wheat some support on ideas that, hey, look, the September 10th report's just around the corner, and are we really going to get that much rain out of Gustav or not?
Well, finally today, thank you very much for sending Chuck and Sherman out with us to Farm Progress Show. I know that's hard on a business to have folks away for that long, but, boy, it made our day out of Farm Progress Show, and I hope they had a good time, and it was worth their time, too.
They made a lot of contacts, and they came back very, very satisfied and happy, so we thank you.
All right, thanks much.
And Todd.
Mm-hmm, bye-bye. That's Mike Zuzlo. He's with Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana. Joins us on the closing mark report on Friday afternoons.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
Up next, legislation introduced on Capitol Hill would give the Secretary of Agriculture the discretionary power to open the Conservation Reserve Program. During During a news conference with the media attending the Farm Progress Show in Iowa, U.S. Secretary of Agriculture Ed Schaefer said the CRP issue is not dead in Washington, D.C. The federal government has been under pressure to open up Conservation Reserve Program acres. The secretary says despite a judicial setback earlier in the year involving a grazing issue, the conversation on the Hill about how to open up the acres has not stopped.
The conversation has definitely not stopped. We're very much committed to using CRP acreage appropriately and economically positive manner for people who have put the programs in place. And, you know, this was something we went through very deeply at USDA and came up with a program that we thought was appropriate. We think meets the environmental needs while providing ability to use that CRP acreage in an economically advantageous position. We're going to pursue it, and it is being pursued legislatively on the Hill, which is where the final answer is going to rise.
To that end, Schaefer told those gathered late on the last day of the Farm Progress Show he expected Congress to find an answer to the CRP question when it returns for the fall session.
There has been legislation introduced that would allow the secretary to change a CRP contract, taking into consideration the environmental impact studies that need be done. I think Congressman Jerry Moran and others have put it out there. It's important legislation. We're urging people to get back, and hopefully when they get back from recess here, they'll, you know, get on that.
The sharp increase in the price of farm commodities like corn, soybean, and wheat this year sparked calls for the early release of Conservation Reserve Program acres. The expectation is that those environmentally sensitive lands would be more beneficial in the short term as a way to boost the availability of the primary food, feed, and fuel crops. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Risk Management Commodities, with offices in Chalmers and Lafayette, Indiana, and Hudsonville, Illinois. Risk Management Commodities provides commodities analysis and recommendations for business and agriculture throughout East Central Illinois and Western Indiana. 866-837-9027.
I'm Todd Gleason for University of Illinois Extension with a history of Labor Day in the United States. It's adapted from a story found on the United States Embassy to Sweden's website. 11-year-old Peter McGuire sold papers on the streets in New York City. He shined shoes and cleaned stores and later ran errands. It was 1863, and his father, a poor Irish immigrant, had just enlisted to fight in the Civil War. Peter had to help support his mother and six brothers and sisters. Many immigrants settled in New York City in the 19th century. They found that living conditions were not as wonderful as they had dreamed. Often there were six families crowded into a house made for one. Thousands of children had to go to work. Working conditions were even worse. Immigrant men, women, and children worked in factories for 10 to 12 hours a day, stopping only for a short time to eat. Came to work even if they were tired or sick, because if they didn't, they might be fired. Thousands of people were waiting to take their places. When Peter was 17, he began an apprenticeship in a piano shop. This job was better than his others, for he was learning a trade, but he still worked long hours with low pay. At night, he went to meetings and classes in economics and social issues of the day. One of the main issues of concern pertained to labor conditions. Workers were tired of long hours, low pay, and uncertain jobs. They spoke of organizing themselves into a union of laborers to improve their working conditions. In the spring of 1872, Peter McGuire and 100,000 workers went on strike and marched through the streets of New York City demanding a decrease in the long working day. This event convinced Peter that an organized labor movement was important for the future of workers' rights. He spent the next year speaking to crowds of workers and unemployed people, lobbying the city government for jobs and relief money. It wasn't an easy road for Peter McGuire. He became known as a disturber of the public peace. The city government ignored his demands. Peter himself could not find a job in his trade. He began to travel up and down the East Coast to speak to laborers about unionizing. In 1881, he moved to St. Louis, Missouri, and began to organize carpenters there. He organized a convention of carpenters in Chicago, and it was there that a National Union of Carpenters was founded. He became the general secretary of the United Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners of America. The idea of organizing workers according to their trade spread around the country. Factory workers, dock workers, and tool makers all began to demand and get their rights to an 8-hour workday, a secure job, and a future in their trades. Peter McGuire and laborers in other cities planned a holiday for workers on the first Monday in September, halfway between Independence Day and Thanksgiving Day. On September 5, 1882, the first Labor Day parade was held in New York City. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 90 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report on a Friday afternoon. Time to check in on the cash grain markets. Bruce Bostard of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company's 10 East Central Illinois and Central Illinois locations joins us now to take that up. Good afternoon to you, Bruce.
Good afternoon.
Are you all ready for a Labor Day weekend?
Yes, we are. You know, normally we're thinking that right after Labor Day we'll see combines rolling. This year, you can enjoy Labor Day a little bit more because I think we have a few weeks in here.
We may have a few weeks, but I already heard about an Illinois combine rolling on some really short season corn in deep southern Illinois. How about that?
It's a coming.
It's coming. That's about all we can say about it at the moment, I suppose. It's coming at some point. And does that mean that we will be widening basis out? Actually,
we've seen basis levels improving a little bit. Not much on soybeans, a penny or so there. Corn, our nearby and new crop numbers have seen about a 5-cent improvement since last Friday. Now, part of that is we're in a little bit of a window. You know, we're using about 1 billion bushels of corn a month, so 750 million bushels in 3 weeks if we're going to shove it back 3 weeks. We've been counting on that southern harvest the last few years to kind of bridge the old crop, new crop, but with the rains that they keep getting across the Delta blowing in from hurricanes, that kind of slows that up a little bit.
Have you heard anything about an early harvest premium being paid out for cash or not out of the field?
I haven't heard that. What we've seen so far has been what was a pretty substantial carry in corn flattening out. So we'll now have to see if that does anything or if we have to move into some type of an inverse to prime the pump. I guess in our area, you know, we had 9/10 of an inch of rain overnight, which helped. It was a couple weeks late. Producers are concerned about how much is out there. I don't see anybody being real anxious to sell additional bushels of new crop until they get out there and see what's actually in the fields.
Maybe as we roll in on our last minute here, you could talk about if that gave any help to the bean crop in your area.
I sure hope so. I mean, we were all very concerned about beans coming into it, and it might have been enough to do some good on that.
And what are your bids for the day?
We are at 5:39 on nearby corn in Paxton, beans 1302. For by the 15th, and 12:39 for full new crop.
Any final word before I let you go?
Well, we wouldn't mind having a little bit more rain.
Okay.
Okay.
It doesn't look like it's coming this weekend.
No.
That's probably good for Labor Day. All right.
We'll take it on Tuesday.
Okay. Thanks much, Bruce.
Thank you.
Bruce Bostard is the general manager of the Ludlow Co-op Elevator Company's 10 East Central and Central Illinois locations. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. We'll be back in 2 minutes when we'll talk with Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
With this look at AM 580 News, I'm Tom Rogers. John McCain's pick of Alaska Governor Sarah Palin as his running mate is generating lots of discussion, not even a day after Barack Obama's acceptance speech. University of Illinois political science professor Brian Gaines sees the choice as evidence of McCain's independence, opting against the more widely expected choices. Gaines also says while Republicans will have to work around Palin's relative lack of experience, that argument may call more attention to Obama's relative youth as well. Obama, meanwhile, is taking his presidential campaign on the road. The Illinois Democrats' first stops after the convention are the battleground states of the Midwest. Today he's headed to Pittsburgh, where he and running mate Joe Biden are kicking off a bus tour of Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Michigan.
An alternative school on Champaign's north side will close its doors. The unit's 4 school district plans to replace all 36 students at Columbia Center and other schools by the end of the year. The school serves middle and high school age students with socially emotional problems. Unit 4 spokeswoman Beth Shepherd says the staff at Columbia are talented, but an independent audit found that they don't have the infrastructure or training to handle the students' issues. Illinois spent more than $17 million turning the Pontiac prison, slated for closure, into a specialty lockup for hundreds of the state's most violent and destructive prisoners. Steel plates keep prisoners from digging through walls, and specially designed doors can't be kicked loose. 6 years later, Governor Blagojevich says shutting the Pontiac prison will save money and let Illinois open a dormant prison elsewhere. But the move will cost the Pontiac area about 570 jobs. State Senator Dan Rutherford represents the Pontiac area and says Illinois needs to use both prisons to help with overcrowding. Indiana Congressman Steve Bouyer says he won't take part in any further debates with Democratic challenger Nels Ackerson. The incumbent Republican is accusing Ackerson of violating a rule during their only scheduled debate in Danville, Indiana, last night. Ackerson said at the end of the debate he had no idea what Bouyer was referring to. A Farm Bureau member says Bouyer was referring to a news release Ackerson had sent out. I'm Tom Rogers.
I'm Todd Gleason. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It is a Friday afternoon. That means we talked to Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here in Urbana-Champaign. Good afternoon to you, Steve.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather for the Labor Day weekend.
Well, it looks really good for the three-day weekend. Temperatures actually will be a little bit, by the end of the weekend, be a little bit warmer than normal. As we get into early September now, we're looking at highs in the low 80s and lows around 60, but we'll be doing a little bit better than that, so we'll pick up some growing degree days here this next week as the heat builds a little bit. We're running about anywhere from 50 to 100 short across the state from what we would normally be this time of year. So the weekend looks good, and it looks like we might get some rainfall next week, depending on how Gustav and Hannah get their acts together. And so overall, it's looking pretty good.
The important part at this point is if we're running behind on growing degree days, that we manage to stay frost-free all the way out. What would be the, and I don't want you to predict a frost because those are pretty hard, but what would be the normal frost dates for Illinois? And they vary from top to the bottom of the state.
Right. Well, if you look at the midpoint here in the central part of the state, it's around October 12th, 13th in that ballpark. So about a week earlier in the north and a week later in the south nominally. So we're looking at, you know, mid to late October for most of the state. And as you said, it's difficult to predict, but we should be picking up on some of those degree days the next week or two, and we'll see how things go from there. But overall, things look pretty good. The big uncertainty, of course, as Ed's been mentioning, is the hurricanes. Gustav looks, I'm looking at a latest satellite photo, and looks there's a very defined eye already, so it may already be at hurricane strength. It was very close. So depending on where that ends up, we could get some good precipitation in here because unlike June and July, which were very wet across the Midwest and much of Illinois, August was on the just totally opposite. It was very dry despite last night's rain.
Yeah, despite last night's rain. How dry have we been? Have you taken a look from the monthly totals to this date?
Yeah,
over time?
We're really running about, except now in western Illinois, which actually did do pretty good yesterday from the rain also Wednesday night into yesterday. But right now it looks like most of the state is running about anywhere from about 50%, 25 to 50% of normal rainfall for the month. Exceptions are western Illinois and far northeastern Illinois. Northeastern Illinois got the rain earlier in the month, but they haven't had much since. And then there's an area here in east central Illinois down, well, basically along the Wabash River all the way down to the Ohio River that's really doing even a little worse, probably anywhere from 25 to 50% of normal, so except in isolated areas. So it's been very dry, but we had a good wet June and July, which has helped quite a bit.
And where would Gustav need to hit in order for us to pick up much rainfall, do you think?
Well, the latest envelope still has it targeted for the central Gulf Coast, namely Louisiana. And it's not just where it hits, but also the timing of any other systems that swing across. There, it looks like there's going to be a cold front swinging through the Midwest sometime next week. And if the timing's right with Gustav and his cold front, it could draw up enough moisture out of the off of that system to give us some good rains here. If the front blows through before the moisture does, then we could get shut off.
Thanks much.
Okay, Todd.
Yeah, that is Steve Hilberg. He's the director of the Midwestern Regional Climate Center right here in Urbana-Champaign and Champaign County, Illinois. I'm Todd Gleason. Thanks for listening. If you'd like to hear Commodity Week this week, we'll record this afternoon at 4:30 and post it to our website at willag.org by 6 o'clock this evening. You have a good weekend.